Welcome to this edition of the Ute Talk podcast. This is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports, joined, as always,
Joseph Silverswag. How's everybody doing today?
Here we are. It's game day for Utah basketball and a few other teams for the Utes.
Yeah, it's busy time.
Yeah, it is. It actually is a pretty busy time. So we'll get into Kuzma Watch, but real quick, softball's in Maryland. They're playing a bunch of teams. They're playing in Maryland. They're playing in Yale. They're playing another logo. I can't remember what it is, but
tournament.
It seems like a little weekend tournament.
Cool. Go softball Utes.
Yep. Then NCAA championships going on today and tomorrow for the skiing team. Hopefully we'll pull out another one. We seem to rather regularly. Mm-hmm. So
do you know ranking, seeding, how any of that works? We have any information?
I don't.
Next year, I want to get a skier in here.
I bet we could do that.
I'm sure we could.
Let's do it. Tennis-wise, the women are playing here against ASU this week. I think tomorrow.
Ooh, Devils, boo.
And then men's tennis is at Vegas, so they're down in Vegas as well. And then gymnastics, we're taking on Michigan at noon this week.
That's
so
exciting.
That is should be a good meet. Hopefully we can boost that RQS.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, top regional 10. Qualifying score, for those of you that don't know. That's actually more important than the W against Michigan.
If they lose 199-200, that is a great day.
That would be amazing.
Like the best possible day.
I don't even know. That would be the most amazing gymnastics I've ever seen.
Yeah, that would be like a 30 for 30 subject at some point. That would be incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It would mean almost everybody got a perfect 10.
How would you
on
name
every
that?
Event.
The day the mats were on fire.
Oh, that's pretty good. Oh, wait. I want to add one more ongoing feature before we move on.
Oh, my gosh.
Check in.
Hold on. We need to do a Kuzma watch.
Okay. Kuzma watch first. Kuzma.
All right. So, Kuz dropped 20 points last night on the Magic.
Nice.
Had one three. Shot 25% for the three. Had 10 boards. He's really been hitting the glass pretty hard this last 4 out of 5 games. He's getting close to double digits on the rebounding. Points, he's in double figures. Shooting's not fantastic. Last night was a really good night, though, so maybe we can get a good run going. He has been being a little bit better than he was right before that.
I really like seeing how when the shots aren't falling, he's still finding a way to get stats and contribute.
Well, there's always ways to contribute, whether the ball's going through the hoop or not. So, let's talk some spring football.
Yeah, can you believe it? Britton Covey was met at the airport by... Oh, wait. You're tricking me. You're trying to get past it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Grants. We have got to check in.
Oh, my gosh.
Fighting Grants. This is Grant's church ball league team.
Yes.
And he bragged about it. His 42-point victory.
Yeah, we had a pretty big one
last
night.
Week. Go.
Well, last week we lost.
How much?
So be it. I'd prefer forget the game.
Okay. What'd you shoot? What are you? Are you the guy who stands at like the half court line and just goes, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball, and then shoots up an impossible Jimmer 3 every time?
No, that is definitely not me.
Are you the guy who never shoots and always passes? That's me. I'm like, my assist numbers are through the roof, but I cannot hit a shot. So that's what I do.
So I'm kind of a, I don't
slam
know.
Dunks.
So
has
I
the alley oops goes way up.
No,
bam, crushes it.
So I'm a 3-point shooter, but I mainly do spot up threes. But I also cut a lot in basketball. Try to keep moving, otherwise the defense can cheat on you a lot. And then rebounding, a lot of in the paint stuff. But
thrust some elbows down there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Not vicious elbows.
No,
just the
just
elbow
enough
to get
just
the rebound.
Make some room. Yeah. That's all right.
Not,
that's what they're for.
I've never played in a church ball game yet, knock on this table right here, that has been the stereotypical church ball game.
Where the testosterone just gets
people
to
lose
be
control
much
of themselves.
Yeah. Good.
But we have our regional tournament game is tonight.
Well, look at that.
So We'll see what happens.
We will check in.
Going as a TC.
Fight Grants next week. But all right, spring ball. I am excited. I was saying Britton Covey's in town. I thought it was really cool. Jack Tuttle showed up.
Winning Hand.
Everybody showed up. It was like when Chase Hansen came back and the whole gang was there. But what I thought was cool, in addition to the coaches, was Tuttle was there to say hi to Britton.
Well, he's on the leadership council.
It's cool. He's sliding right into that role. And seems to be taking it very seriously, which I like.
But it'll be interesting, right? It's spring ball, so I discounted a lot on how much I take from it. But I'm intrigued to see what happens come fall with Huntley and Tuttle and how quickly Tuttle, he's been working.
He's very talented, and he's working hard, and he's not messing around a bit. It's clear he has no intention of settling for a redshirt year.
He's going to fight. It's going to be a battle.
We'll tell you what's really happening, because you're going to hear from Winnie, well, we don't know. We're going to play whoever gives us the best chance to win all the coach speak, right? That's what you're going to get. But what you want to watch is Shelley. If Shelley gets bumped out and Tuttle is second string, that tells you, A, he's playing well enough that they're willing to burn his red shirt, and B, that he's not the worst quarterback on the team. And that's the information you want to watch. Is he on the depth chart at the end of spring? If he's not, I don't think it's really worth thinking about. It's very unlikely. If he can't beat out Shelley by the end of March or April, he's not going to beat out Huntley by August. So here's the question. Do you think, based on, and keep in mind, we've seen almost nothing. I still haven't gone to practice. Have you been to practice yet?
No.
No, I'm really hoping to go soon. But we're still working on that. Quarterback by end of April.
Yes, is my prediction.
Okay.
I just...
Quarterback by end of April.
Yes. Is my prediction.
Okay.
I just... The whole time... Is it Shelley or Shelley? I can't remember.
Shelley.
But the whole time I see that, I think... I feel like that kid's going to eventually turn into a safety.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. And that's my whole logic behind my pick of him being... The second string.
I think the only reason he's not already a safety is depth. And he's, by all accounts, he's pretty good. I mean, it's not a knock on the kid. He's just, the most exciting things about his talent have nothing to do with playing quarterback. And I could see in the same way that you've now seen many times moving these quarterbacks over to defense, and their understanding of the way quarterbacks think and the way offenses try to fill space gives them the ability to really predict what's going to happen next, and that's a critical part of playing safety, particularly in the Whittingham defense. And so I think I agree with you, and I think if Utah had signed another quarterback, he'd already be playing safety. No. They couldn't go out and get another QB because they didn't want Tuttle to look elsewhere, and part of the agreement with the early commitment was you're not going to talk to another 2018 kid. But I wonder if they got an early commit from Hank Buckmeyer or one of the other high-end quarterbacks that are looking at for next year's class, if they might not push Shelley to safety, especially because you're not going to hear about him too much, but Drew Lisk is a competent pocket passer. He's a little guy, but he's got a decent arm. He makes good decisions, and he's accurate at short range. So I think that you can say, if we get to the point where we need a third string guy, our third string guy is functional. He works and he can play. He's a walk-on right now, And it would take injuries before you'd be even talking about him as taking live snaps. But he can play. So I do think that Shelley is destined for defense as soon as the roster allows it.
So, all right, so there's the Tuttle. We almost have to make a Tuttle watch with how excited fans are about him.
Yeah, I think that
but
makes sense.
What else are you looking for in spring ball?
O-line. That's all I care about. I think the entire offense runs through that. I think if you look at all the games last year, good games are when the O-line performed. Bad games are when they didn't. There's the most uncertainty at that position. I'm not really worried about wide receivers. Tight ends, kind of take them or leave them. If they're good, that's great. But we don't need them. Running backs is stacked.
Totally stacked.
Huntley. There's some questions at various positions on defense, but it's a Kyle Whittingham defense, and I'm just not that worried about it.
Okay. So I know you're not
so
worried
I'm
about
really
it.
Looking at who's going to play guard, and I think if we can find guys who are Pac-12, all Pac-12 caliber guards, Utah's going to win a heck of a lot of games. And Utah missed on recruits, and they didn't really back that up or have fallback positions on a few O-line recruits, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I feel like the battle in the trenches is what's intriguing to me. Now, like I said, I discount spring ball a ton, but offensive line on your side, I'm intrigued to see defensive line because ultimately I was very disappointed in the defensive line last year.
It took a long time for them to get into position, and I think what was shocking was the interior. It was we had two, maybe even three NFL quality defensive tackles who are going to get drafted even still, and they just they didn't play that hard.
It really didn't seem that way.
It didn't seem like his heart was in it almost ever. And when Utah's defense was at its best was almost always when Leki Fotu was in there.
Yep.
I mean, the good news is Utah's pulled in a ton of talent. I mean, they always have a ton of these huge, powerful players. A lot of them are ready to contribute right now. This guy, I think he's got to wait out a year, but there's a 6'7" DT transfer from Hawaii who's a magnificent player, a really good film. And then Miale, and there's a ton of guys. It's just a question of who's going to pop up, I think, more than anything. And there's been some movement on the line. I think some interesting things that you see in the roster were they pushed, I think, Devere Hamilton and Chris Hart both back to linebacker. I know they did with Chris Hart, but they're moving guys back. No, Hamilton's still listed as a defensive end, but it's 6'2", 240. You wonder if that's really where he's best at. And I really like seeing Whittingham start to pull these guys off of the line, out of the dirt. It's been a tradition for a long time to take your linebacker in the 6'1 to 6'3 range. You put 20 pounds on him and you put his hand in the dirt and make him a pass rusher. And it's not that that's a bad strategy. I mean, that's Nate Orchard, that's Hunter Dimmick. I mean, a lot of guys who haven't fit the sort of prototypical pass rush Pac-12 mold have come from that. But I think last year we started to see the limitations where Bradley and I and Kylie Fitz are true defensive ends. They're tall, they've got long legs, long arms, and when they were at their best and healthy, they played and put pressure on the quarterback against a different quality and caliber of offensive tackle than the smaller guys were able to do. And when they started to get injured, you really felt that lack of depth, even though there were a bunch of guys. Well, who's going to step up? But they were all that push-forward linebacker. And with some of the guys that they got in
in recruiting, particularly Rex Jordan is really big long defensive end. Some of the other guys, I'm hopeful to see them maybe able to pull back some of these converted linebackers, fill in depth at linebacker, which has always been an issue since they came to the Pac-12, and then be a little more consistent and effective against the very best tackles that the Pac-12 has to offer.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see, but I'm ready to talk some basketball. How about yourself?
Man, it's exciting. 3 seed, here we go. I mean, it's time. Tonight's the night we're recording on Thursday, so... And you'll be listening here in no time, and the game is at... Is it at 7?
Game's at 9:30.
9:30. Ugh.
Late tip. It's going to be late night. But, so, here's my question. Do you want to talk Pac-12 tournament, or do you want to talk NCAA outlook first?
Let's talk about the Pac-12. I think that's going to have a huge impact on what happens next.
Yeah, so this will be interesting. So, Oregon won last night in overtime against Wazoo.
Cooped it. They cooped it.
And personally, that's the best outcome. If it's going to be, not going to be Wazoo, at least it went to overtime and they played super late. And as much as it's a late tip today, their legs are still more tired than the Utes. Now, granted, they lost to Cal last year when they played the night before. So it'll be interesting to see. The other big thing here is how big of an impact does Collette have? And the fact that, you know, rumblings are is he's probably not playing. I haven't heard an official statement.
With an ankle, that's a maybe yes, maybe no. He's not going to be the same guy, right?
Right.
He's not going to be as mobile. He's not going to be as powerful. And that, so he's going to be either out or limited.
Right. So let's talk about this a little bit. So against Oregon, who we beat in their own house, Collette was our third leading scorer, but with 11 points, Rawson had 10. Otherwise, he would have been the third leading scorer. So I'm actually kind of hopeful that we might be able to sneak past this one. Between tired legs in the end of the second half and the fact that Bibbins, Bearfield, and Rawson, they're all going to be playing, we should be good. Now, that's the hopeful part, right? We beat them when Collette wasn't at his best. The negative news is that if you look at our conference stats, our number one most efficient offensive player over the conference, David Collette. Our top scoring player per 100 possessions in conference, David Collette. Our top scorer per 40 minutes in conference, David Collette. We go, let's see here.
He's the best player on the team.
I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, it takes me getting to the conference per game to get him to where he's not the number one scorer
but
on the team.
He's still number two.
Yeah, and he's number two by like 3 points. Mm-hmm. So he's a big part of this team. And it's concerning that he's not playing. As much as he wasn't like the top dog when we beat him before, now we're in tournament play. Now, we haven't played for like a week, and they're coming fresh off a game last night that they won in overtime. How all those things mix together in the formula of what happens tonight is you could take me many ways. And ultimately, I try to be the optimist. As much as you're the pessimist, Joseph.
We're going to lose by 50.
Whoa.
I'm just kidding.
That's more of a pessimist than I expected.
I'm really feeling the... I would say the one thing I would add to the formula is Coach K and the improvement that we've seen from the other bigs on this roster over the course of the year, and I think it's been fair.
So, wow, now I'm going to switch to pessimist
right
now.
Oh, no! See, this is what's good, though. We're flexible.
So, as much as we can say Coach K, you know, is the coach of the year snub, and we can talk about that in a minute, but and as much as he does develop players, I don't feel the same way. Collette anchors that those post players. As much as Rossin has played well, I don't consider him a true post player. I don't feel like I've seen a ton of improvement of Jace Johnson or Chris Seeley. So,
do you feel like you've seen improvement from Seeley and Johnson?
I mean,
let's look. Let's talk.
I haven't been too impressed. I mean, honestly, unless these two bigs coming in, especially Batten, who's supposed to have a much better offensive game than defensive, like, here's the problem. Colette, as much as we've proven how good of a scorer he is for his team, I mean, he was on a tear, not even missing a bucket most of the end of the season, but he's that calming influence, if that makes sense. Bibbins and Bearfield, things aren't quite working out. He sets him up in the post and gets a layup, and he makes his shots. And so it kind of calms things down, is how I feel. And that calming influence is going to be gone. And I don't feel like Seeley and Johnson are going to come in and be able to really pick it up that much. I feel like they're good bigs. They'll get some rebounds, hopefully play some good defense. But
it's so hard to tell when they play a few minutes. But I will say, yeah, Jace Johnson, when he does play minutes, doesn't seem to create shots. And I think that goes to what you're saying, which is that he's not a catalyst for the team. He's an effective piece, but Colette creates and changes the nature of how the defense has to respond. And Jace Johnson doesn't do that. Now, Chris Seeley, on the other hand, you look at his numbers, and I'm looking at like shots per minute, rebounds per minute against USC. 4 minutes, took 3 shots, got 3 rebounds against Colorado. 12 minutes, took a shot, got 4 rebounds. I mean, he's involved. He is involved. He's part of the
It's the just not the
more of an activator.
It's not the senior post presence that when you need a bucket, you know you can put it in there and he's going to make a good decision.
That's true. And none of this is to say, I mean, if Colette was healthy, he'd be starting. You'd expect him to play almost every minute of the game.
Yeah, he'd be playing. Well, he plays about 30 minutes a game. That's what I would expect.
That's what you'd see. But since he's not, my point is just that if he was out of the lineup against Oregon a month ago, it would have been a different story than it is today.
True. We'll see.
But I think we were on more or less the same page. I can't say I'm optimistic that Colette loss is a big deal. And I don't know where Vegas is. I'm going to look that up right now.
I believe Oregon's a 2-point favorite right now.
That sounds about right. The geography and the home field, home court advantage plays in Utah's favor and isn't something we should forget. But just like the...
Well, that Oregon game that they won was at Oregon.
Right, but it's just one game, right?
You can't
draw...
This is just one game.
You can't draw conclusions about the way the teams are opposed to each other from one game, but you'd rather they've won it than have lost it.
Right.
And I don't know. I think -2, +2 is about right for the Utes.
So what's your prediction?
Point flip. I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to lose by 4 or 5. I think it's going to feel like the Arizona or ASU games in the Huntsman where they're just on the cusp but can't quite break through.
Okay. I'm going to predict almost a triple-double from Tyler Rossin, a Bibbins and Bearfield crazy games, and they're going to win by 5.
If Tyler Rossin gets a triple-double, they'll win by more than 5.
Just say it.
All right. I like it. I like the specificity. I like the optimism. It's a good prediction.
All right. So let's talk about the tournament, because we both agree after talking to Washburn that we want them to get the NCAA.
And honestly, although I was rooting for Washington State because I like wins and Washington State's an easier win,
right?
Oregon is way better for the resume.
Another
notch in the belt over Oregon would be worthwhile, especially with ASU
you know, poop in the bed over the last
whole
month. I mean, they've been pretty terrible, honestly, and they got run out of the stadium, and it's been, from where they started, it's really been a disaster for the Devils.
Yeah, and let's just talk about this. So, like, ESPN and CBS are the two bracketology sites I typically go to. Joe Lunardi and ESPN right now are dead to me because Utah's not even listed. And he's got ASU
Burn him down.
CBS, though, has Utah and Arizona State, since you mentioned them, as the first four out. Okay. And a last four in, interesting enough, is USC.
Okay.
And I see this and I think we win tonight. There's a high likelihood we're facing USC.
With a ton on the line.
And that is a big game. I think if the Utes get through if they can get to the final.
Oh, yeah.
And keep it close. They should be in.
And I don't think they even need to keep it close, barring disaster in the other tournaments. And that's the crazy thing about the selection, right? Is if some crap team goes and wins the Big East unexpectedly, it adds a guaranteed berth and pushes everybody.
Shrinks the bubble.
You're really rooting for
your favorites.
Yeah, the boring teams to just cruise. And
look, guys,
that's what you want.
Just cheer for the upsets next week.
That's right. That's right.
This
and
week,
then we
don't want upsets.
Hoping for that 15-2 or the elusive 16-1 upset that has never occurred, but will.
So for right now, let's thank our good friends down south for losing in the WCC tournament final.
Oh, man.
So that we didn't have another bubble shrinkage.
How about Utah having lost to what appears to be a pretty bad BYU team?
Yeah.
That's rough. That's a rough L.
Well, it is what it is at this point. But we'll see. I think the Utes got to make it to the final. Personally, I think they got to keep the final close for it to get them in the tournament, otherwise win it. I think if it's a blowout, if they make it to the final and it's a blowout, I don't think they get in.
Okay. I just don't think anybody's going to be watching. I mean, these games are late. Nobody seems to care.
They'll be watching.
Yeah, they don't seem to. They never watch. We'll run it on, you know, Fox Sports 3 and, you know, Taiwanese, and nobody will see it. And then the NAS
maybe tonight
trucks will cover the second half. And
oh, boy. Well, I think the committee takes it a little bit more seriously and watches the games.
They do.
You know, outside of that, I mean, I'm predicting a win, and we'll see what happens against USC or the winner of the USC game. I can't say it's USC, I guess. But
who are they playing?
Is it Oregon State?
I mean,
I'm cringing. I really don't know.
Yeah, whoever. Because
I've already dismissed them. I've already put USC in the semifinal.
Right. It's just some poor placeholder who's going to get it worked over. But I can pull up in just 2 seconds. Yes, it is Oregon State who defeated
Washington.
Let's use that to segue. They defeated Washington. And was not Washington's head coach winner of the esteemed Pac-12 Coach of the Year trophy
with their glorious regular season record of, let's find out, 20-12, 6th in the Pac-12. Great work, guys. I guess they beat USC. That's their win. Oh, no, they had that good stretch against ASU and Arizona. But anyway, they lost by 3 to Oregon State.
In overtime.
Right out in overtime. So, see you later. The AP gave the Coach of the Year award to the correct coach, which is
Larry
Miscoviac. I mean, come on. Come on.
I mean, I've gotten to the point between Gianni Paul, Michaela Skinner.
It's a thing.
Larry Krzyzkowiak. I don't plan on Utah getting any of those accolades. I mean, granted, Bibbins did make first team Pac-12, so congratulations,
that's
Bibbins.
Cool.
I believe Collette made second team Pac-12.
That's
so
fair.
Hey,
that's
kudos
tough,
to them.
That front court's tough to break into.
But
so.
Yeah, I mean, I get
that
it.
Gianni A. Paul. That was. That, I mean.
I'm sorry to bring up past frustrations with you.
Yeah, it was
but I've just
unconscionable snub. It was seriously like they took the record.
There's steam, guys.
They had.
He's catching fire.
Here we go. They sent out the criteria, and somebody swapped it. And so instead of saying the player who was the best defensive player, it said, who was the tallest defensive player in the Pac-12? And that seems to be the criteria. And God bless that kid. He's a beast, and he's doing well in the NFL. But it's a college award, and he didn't do anything. His counting stats, and oh, man.
Deep breath. So, ultimately, after all those snubs, I've kind of just gotten to the point of not caring. Because the Pac-12 coaches and those people who vote for those things have shown their ineptitude and inability to select someone who should actually have the reward if following their name it says, comma, Utah.
Yeah, that's the truth. And what we're going to have to do is we're just going to have to keep winning and rubbing their faces in it, and eventually they'll capitulate under duress.
Well, good luck on that. Well, hey, just want to give a shout out to the man who created our logos, Mr. Dalai Lama on Twitter. His website is dhlelama.com. Check him out for some Utah gear. Really good stuff. I think he's still doing pre-orders of some polos and coats and jackets and zips, three-quarter zips. It's awesome. They're
and
great
gear. And
all
sorts of other stuff. I know he's got a graphic design
vinyl
company,
stickers.
So, I mean, he can do, if you've got a business or something, he can do all sorts of
yeah,
products.
Go check him out.
He's cool.
Take care. I mean, and the Utah gear is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's not break the bank cost. It's very well priced. Thanks, Dalai Lama.
All officially licensed,
all
that stuff.
Correct.
So he runs through all of the real stuff.
It's legit.
And honestly, most of his designs are better than what you get up.
I agree.
I mean, there's some good stuff up there, but I like what he does. And periodically, we all ask ourselves, why haven't they hired this guy yet?
Ultimately, it's better for us, but
yeah.
True. So, otherwise, please go review us. Tell us what we're doing wrong. Tell us how we could improve the show. Email uketalk@gmail.com. Twitter, uketalkpodcast. I'm Grant TBS on Twitter. He's Jay Silverswig on Twitter. And let's go Utes.
Go Utes.